Welcome back. It's time for another episode of the Extra Features Movie Review Podcast. This is episode number 257, and I'm Kevin, and it rhymes.
And I'm somebody's name I forgot. Oh, Boner Stabone, I remembered.
Boner
Stabone for Growing Pains.
Yeah. I'm Daniel, the talking born out of accent. How are you?
And I'm Doug. Just Doug.
Just Doug.
Nobody remembers Boner Stabone from Growing Pains?
No.
I remember him.
That's the greatest name ever in TV history. Boner Stabone.
I thought that was like something you put on a t-shirt. I thought that was a hippie Halloween reference.
No, this is like a real name.
Okay.
So guys, I want to tell you I've had a busy Sunday before we recorded. I got up this morning. I had nothing. I could have. I have a PS2. I like my PS2. I decided, you know what? I'm going to play a PS2 game I haven't played. I'm playing Scooby-Doo and the Swamp Monsters or something. And it's not horrible. So I had felt like wearing my Scooby-Doo shirt in honor of playing my PS2 game.
You're playing your PS2. You realize that PS5 is coming out this week, right?
Oh, I have a PS3 and I have a PS4.
Okay.
I just play my PS2 more often than anything
just
else.
Just for the Scooby-Doo, yeah.
I haven't played it. I just found it about a month ago, and I just felt it was time to break it open.
Mm.
Did you beat it yet? Did you just start it?
It's 4 hours. I only had time. It's football Sunday.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
Anything else happen with dogs today?
No.
You want to talk about
dogs?
No.
I don't want to talk about that.
What are dogs?
We could talk about the Dolphins watching my team, the other team missing a field goal in the last 30 seconds of the game. I'm sure it's vastly interesting for a non-sports podcast.
Yeah. Is that a baseball team?
Yeah, it's a baseball team.
There you go.
We'll beat the Arizona Cardinals. Yeah.
Okay. You guys got nothing today to bring me. Dog, nothing?
Nothing big happened in America, sorry.
Okay, fair
nothing
enough.
At all.
No, not like,
yeah, no.
No presidential elections or anything like
no.
that.
No.
You're boring here.
I thought you were going to go steal some ballots over the border.
Wait, me or Doug?
How are you going to steal ballots over the border?
No.
The election's over.
It's not over.
It's over.
Getting illegal votes.
No, I read, I got legal. Rudy Giuliani told me today.
Oh, yeah?
We're going to pursue every legal action.
Was that at the Four Seasons landscaping parking lot?
I think right, it was, actually.
Right by Fantasy Island Porn Shop and
yes, that was
the crematorium.
And I think it was a 15-year-old girl in the background.
Okay.
Yeah, after getting kicked by Borat?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. Now, are we starting there, or are we doing that crying question that Doug had posed?
Oh, I forgot, Doug. We're starting a new segment this week just for Doug. And what's the question of the week, Doug?
Well, I thought we could do a Better Know a Host segment where we each pose questions to the other hosts. And my question was, what's an example of a movie that has made you cry?
Now, is this question for everybody or just one person?
For everybody. Everybody can answer a movie that made them cry. If you want, I'll start off.
Sure.
The movie that made me cry the most recently was probably The Room. Or is it Room? I forget. The good one.
By one? Okay, Room.
Yeah.
No. I love both of them.
The one with Captain Marvel.
Oh, hi, Mike.
Yes.
I love both these films.
The scene in that movie that made me weep uncontrollably was when Jacob Tremblay looked up and said, "I love you, Grandma." I cried so hard when I saw that.
Fair.
Who's number two?
Now, I mean, I can go. Now, just a little context. In high school, I used to keep a list of movies I've cried at, but now I cry at so many movies I can't keep a list. My favorite movie is The Green Mile. I cry at that one every time. Sorry, what are you saying, Simon?
Nothing. It's got a stupid grin in my face.
Okay. You're not even on the video, you're not going to be on it. Because I'm doing the speaker view or gallery view.
You're in speaker view, okay.
Yeah. And then recently, Little Woman, I just had something about it stuck with me. Just crying like a lot during it. And then Perks of Being a Wallflower, because that was the movie that helped me like learn I had anxiety. So that's three movies, but yeah, that's a bit about me.
Well, a movie I can recall crying at is Star Trek Generations. So Picard goes into the energy ribbon, and he wakes up, and he's in his house. He's got all these kids, and they're all like, oh, Papa, and his dead nephew is there, Renee, and he apparently he's got a wife, and he's like living in 17th century France in the 23rd century or whatever it is. And, you know, he's just so happy to be surrounded by kids. Like, this guy who hated kids through the entire run of Star Trek The Next Generation. But he's, like, seeing an alternate future, and I'm like, that's kind of sad. It's like, this is the path that could have happened had he gone a different way. And it made me sad.
Sure.
And then Shatner showed up.
Yeah, I'll go really deep. I was going to pick a different film. I think I will. Tokyo Story made me cry. The way they treated their parents in that film, and nobody wanted to hang out with them. And the whole film just gets depressing as it goes because they're just older. That actually made me cry, that somebody would do that to their parents that was so kind and sweet to them. So there you go. Tokyo Story.
Which the weirdest movie that made me cry was when I get sick, I get emotional. And one day I was super sick. And I cried while watching This Is Spinal Tap.
Well, you should. Those little people in the little house.
Well, I was like, they're just such good friends.
And such good scene.
I don't know why.
Okay. Nice. Yeah, like, no, sorry. There's just one more for me. The weird movies that have made me cry.
Just one. You made a list.
I know. It's true. It's true.
No, you can do an episode on
where's
this movie
the
list? To make Daniel cry.
Somewhere on my email, probably. Yeah, no, I felt like that was like a cool thing.
If we continue like this, Simon's going to make you cry.
Yeah, probably.
Oh, guaranteed. This is like a disappointment. Yeah. You don't bring your list to the show. It's like not good prep.
Yeah. I said click for my fourth one.
That's a nice.
That's a nice really. Click.
Oh, yes, Borat subsequent movie film, directed by Jason Wallner, starring Sacha Baron Cohen, Maria Bakalova, and Rudy Giuliani.
Mike Pence.
Tom Hanks at one point.
So who wants to start?
You do.
I do. I laughed. I mean, I'm not a huge Borat fan, and I watched it the day it debuted on Amazon Prime, and I thought it was pretty funny. And I thought the girl playing his daughter was great. And there was like a touching father-daughter relationship, even though there were all these weird aspects to it, like the handbook of she's watching the animated movie of Princess Melania meeting King Trump and, you know, little things like that. And she has a book on the daughter's handbook where she talks about her vagina coming alive and eating her and, little things like that. No, I enjoyed it. I mean, it's well timed. I guess he knew that, I mean, he started filming before the pandemic. Mm-hmm. And I guess the whole point was to sort of lampoon the election. So he kind of got the pandemic thrown in there for fun. Well, not that the pandemic is fun, but along with the election. And it looked more like, it's again another look at the Republican side and the way that people view, the Democrats and the election itself. And there are a couple of great sequences, like when he goes to that, so he hooks up with those two guys, he lives with them during the shutdown.
Yeah.
And then they go to some kind of country fair, and he's dressing in a fat suit, and he pretends to be Farmer Joe or something like that. And he starts singing a song about killing Democrats and journalists and all sorts of stuff. And the whole audience is singing along, and it's just sad, you know, sad look at things. And then, of course, the big sting with Giuliani at the end there. Which, you know, just goes to show you, to me, it goes to, in my opinion, Giuliani had no idea what was going on and thought he was getting lucky. So, I don't know. But I liked it. I thought it was funny.
Okay, I guess I should go next. and I'll let my buddy speak for me.
Well,
I'm hanging out with my buddy Borat. He wants to be on the screen about his movie.
Oh, yeah.
So I think that Mike Pence sold this film. Mm. When he's dressed as Trump carrying his daughter around, I was dying.
Yeah.
And I liked how he started off the movie. I want to know, do you guys think the scene in the town was set up when people go, hey, it's Borat, or no?
No, I don't think so.
Yeah, I felt the same way. And what was up with the cell phone thing? Like, is that guy an idiot?
That was great.
Number one, look, he think he's an idiot. Yeah, he's been in, he's doing porn in the bathroom. I thought that was a good scene.
Mm-hmm.
But I really liked the babysitter. I thought she did a good job.
Mm-hmm.
I thought she was good.
The whole going for breast surgery augmentation.
Oh, was just silly.
Yeah.
And just things like that. I didn't find it as funny as the first one because it didn't have naked wrestling.
Mm-hmm.
Nothing like naked fighting throughout. I think Borat came at this film with a message.
Mm-hmm.
And just said, I'm going to mock these guys because I hate their guts.
Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, I think he did a good job. I didn't love it as much as I loved the first one, but I think he tried hard. I give him credit. He pulled it off pretty much a second time. Now, I guess the funny thing is, are we going to get a third one at some point? I'd say yes.
Maybe.
Whenever he feels like it.
Yeah. Always something to commentate on.
Mm-hmm.
But, I mean, his daughter was really nobody before this film that I knew of. I've never seen her in anything. I think she's unknown, isn't she?
Pretty much. She's like the number one star on IMDb right now.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so we'll have to see. I mean, I think she did a fabulous job. I think he, again, does a fabulous job. I did want to say one more thing. I did feel bad for the Republican father-daughter dance kind of thing, the cotillion. Yeah. I felt kind of bad for them because I don't think they were doing anything wrong. I think they were just trying to make memories, spending time with their dads. Before they came, I don't need to say, I guess the best word I can say, women. Like, they're getting ready to move out of the house. Maybe they're getting ready to move out of college. I really felt bad for those people in that scene. Because, I mean, they did nothing wrong.
That was disturbing. That was the first disturbing scene in the film.
Yeah.
With the,
menstruation.
I was thinking it for myself. If I was there for my daughter and this crap went down, I wouldn't be happy.
Right.
Fair.
I think I'd be a little pissed off. So, I mean, I understand he's a shock comedian. That's what he wants to do. I accept that. But, I think Doug would be pissed if that happened to him on his daughter's thing, even though Doug doesn't have a daughter. Sorry to interrupt you there. But, you know, I'd just be angry.
That was weird, though, with the one father offering to buy her.
Yeah.
Or something. That was bizarre.
Yeah. $500. Like, wait. Okay. Do you want to go ahead?
Sure, I'll go. I actually watched this movie back-to-back with the first one, because my son hadn't seen the first Borat, so Thursday night we watched Borat 1. And then Friday night that it was released, we watched Borat 2. Borat 2 didn't have the big belly laughs that Borat 1 had. Nothing made us laugh as hard as the naked wrestling scene that in the first one. That was I had forgotten about it, so when it came up again, I was blown away by it when they end up down in the lobby of the hotel. It was amazing. Borat 2, I thought it was very good. It definitely had very funny moments. And I think Tutor, I think she was amazing. She had just as big a balls as Sacha Baron Cohen. When she was doing the debutante ball dance, that was – I wasn't expecting it. I'm sure the people at the ball were not expecting it. But she was amazing in that scene, that she just went for it.
Yeah. I think that...
I just have one thing to add. Next time me and Daniel run into each other in Montreal, expect a reenactment, scene for scene, shot of the naked wrestling in the hotel.
Okay.
And I'm talking full reenactment.
Okay. I'll
So will Daniel be Sasha?
Oh, yeah, for sure. Cause I'm fatter than Daniel, so definitely I'm going
to
be there.
Because I was going to ask, do I have to shave or do I just grow everything out?
You're good to go. We're just reenacting exactly the way we are. Clothes come off, off we go.
Okay. Okay.
Does that mean one of you are going to end up a chair?
Yes.
That made me laugh in this one.
Yeah.
I was like, oh gosh. Yeah, no, but I agree with mostly everything you guys say. Like, the shock factor from the first one's kind of gone, but I think it still works. How many years later is it? 14? I think the one sequence that made me laugh the hardest was the baby one with her eating the, swallowing it and then going to the,
Oh, that was hilarious. That was hilarious.
And like, we put baby inside me. I thought that was great. And I find it a strange trend with like the Jay and Bob reboot, Bill and Ted, that is like, it's all daughters. And like the best way to reboot, the best way to do like a sequel, that's like so long since the last one is just bring a daughter in, you know? And yeah, I think this works, but I hit like a comedy wall where I just didn't really care as much anymore with like within like last half an hour, but I still thought it had a lot of funny moments.
That's it? Just some funny moments?
Yeah, just wasn't too passionate about this one as I thought I wanted to be. I
guess. But you are going to be passionate about the reenactment.
Yeah, I'll bring my all for that one.
Good.
Okay, do I have to put the accent on?
Oh, of course.
Okay.
I said shot by shot reenactment. Doug's coming. Okay. We've got to be ready.
Well, I'll do the camera.
Yeah, okay. We know that.
Yeah.
I'm just worried about running into a covenant of witches, though, at the same time. Like, I hope they're not there the same weekend because I need that boardroom.
Yeah, exactly. The Witches 2020, directed by Robert Zemeckis, with Anne Hathaway, Octavia Spencer, Stanley Tucci, Chris Rock, Kristen Chenoweth, and Jazeera Bruno.
Is that the first rap?
That's the hero boy.
Yeah, that's what I thought. I couldn't remember.
It's okay.
I can start for a change. You know what's funny? I put on Hocus Pocus for my daughter recently. She hadn't seen it. I thought Hocus Pocus was this film, the original one. So I never realized I'd never seen Hocus Pocus before. Thinking all this time, I'm waiting to go, when does this scene happen with all the witches in the room? And I realized it was all the years I thought Hocus Pocus were the witches, but I'd seen the witches, never Hocus Pocus.
Okay.
So that aside, I really like this. I like the CGI. I think they really made Anne Hathaway look evil to me. And I think my favorite scene is the way he describes the witches and how they look. And Anne Hathaway is getting undressed and you can see everything the boy would see and the way they shoot it from a child's perspective, I like. Because I really think the film was shot like it should be for a child. It wasn't shot for adults.
Yes.
But I like that. I love the mouse scene when they're running down the thing. I thought that worked perfectly. I love the shots of the kitchen. I felt they made an effort to make this film for adults, even though it is for children. So children aren't being down talked to, is I guess what I'm trying to say. Do you know what I mean? It's a basic story. There's no surprises, but it works. I like how they don't resolve the ending. I really, really like that, how they kept them the way it is and they can't change it. I really thought Octavia Spencer was biting the big bullet at some point during this film. I really thought she was going to go. What else do I want to say? I just think it's wonderful. I mean, it's basic, don't get me wrong, but it's so well told. I think the pacing is good. And I think I said Anne Hathaway works so well as the head witch. Octavia Spencer works wonderful, and the voice acting works. I don't really like Kristen Chenoweth's movement. Like, I always find she has the same look on her face in every movie. But I find her voice talent is excellent. The lead hero mouse had great, and that fat kid was wonderful voice.
Yeah.
So I felt they worked where they should have and found some voice talent I hadn't heard. And I found Kristen Chenoweth's voice, when it gets high enough, does sound like a little girl. And I like how maybe the original story does this too, and they bring it back to the witch knew Octavia Spencer, remembered her from way back when. I thought that was a nice tie-in. I like the end of the film tie-in. I think Chris Rock really ties well this film together, the beginning and the end pieces. So, yeah, I'm definitely going to give this a thumbs up and a must-watch.
Well, I'm on the other side of this one.
Yeah, you're not sure.
Okay. I didn't like the CGI. I don't know what to tell you. I just didn't like the way Anne Hathaway looked. I thought the idea of the lines on the mouth to like when she just stretches her face, I thought that was interesting.
Hold on. You just said you didn't like the CGI. Have I heard that correctly?
Yeah, I mean, but that's different from.
You just complained about the lines, but that's all CGI.
Well, no, like the makeup is the smile.
Isn't that CGI? Gavin, Doug, wait in here, please.
Okay, dude, I just said that I thought that was just makeup. I mean, I'm trying to say that I didn't like the CGI when she smiled. I just didn't like it. I didn't like how it looked.
I'm not taking away from you. I'm asking a question.
Okay.
Was it makeup or CGI on the lights? Doug?
I think it was probably a combination of both. They probably had, when she wasn't stretching out, it was probably just makeup. And then when she went full witch, that's when the CGI came in.
Yeah, so, okay, I'll continue. Yeah, I didn't like how she looked. I didn't like her voice. I just didn't like Hathaway here. Okay.
This hotel fights could be the bomb now.
Okay. I didn't vibe with this. I liked the original a lot. I just didn't really like this one that much. And it felt flat to me.
Okay, sorry to interrupt you again. How did it feel flat?
Why are you challenging everything I'm saying, man?
I'm just interested.
Okay, no, I don't know. I never thought that I found an extra gear.
Okay.
It's just a basic remake to me. I just didn't really enjoy it that much.
Fine with me. I'm just asking a question.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, I don't know what else to say. I just didn't enjoy it that much.
Fair enough.
Okay, I'll go. I've never read the book. I never saw the original film, so this is my first time with this story. I enjoyed it. I thought it was something that I haven't seen in a while. It's actually a horror movie that's made for little kids. It wasn't filmed like a comedy. It wasn't filmed like an action movie per se, though there were action scenes. I thought it was really filmed more as a horror film for a younger audience. And I really enjoyed it. I liked Anne Hathaway in this. I thought she was just chewing up scenery with relish in this film. Octavia Spencer was there to ground things, but Anne Hathaway was just relishing being wicked and vile and evil. I enjoyed it for what it was.
Sure.
I even like the look of the witches in the room. When she takes out that one witch because she made a comment she didn't like, boom, gone.
Yeah.
I just thought that worked. No, when you say the film was flat, I was just wondering why. Because I didn't feel it was flat in any way. That's why I'm asking you that question.
Okay.
Challenging me like, Daniel, you're crazy. It's flat. No, I want to know what I missed.
Okay. No, sorry.
Because usually we're opposite. Usually I hate everything and you're like, Simon, you're crazy.
No, I know.
No,
sorry.
I think this had plenty of life in it.
Okay. Yeah, I don't know. I did like the look of the witches and just the idea of them. I don't know. I think I'm attached to the original and it's just kind of like, yeah, for me.
Which is very acceptable. I accept that as an answer.
Okay.
So, are you sure you're not lying about this, Daniel?
Oh, Kevin didn't watch it, eh?
I didn't see it, so no.
He didn't see it, so I'm skipping him.
Okay. The Lie, directed by Vina Sood, starring Joey King, Peter Sarsgaard, Mira Enos, Cass Anbar, and Patty Kim.
I can go first if you guys want.
Sure.
Oh, feel free, because I'm going to hurt you.
Well, I hated this movie until the last 5 minutes or so, and then I could not stop laughing. I did not know that this movie was going to be a comedy.
Okay, I'm on board.
Everything was just so overwrought. Everybody was just acting like this is They're acting to the masses, and everything is so heartbreaking. Everything is so tough. And I get it, but it was such a small film. Mm-hmm. And then that ending, I could not stop laughing at it. It was the twist that I didn't see coming, and it was hysterical to me.
That's fair.
Kevin?
You know, if I found it funny, it was stupid. Talk about, it was like a very Three's Company type of form, like suspension.
Come and knock on my door.
It was like, so something happens and everybody runs with it, like it's, and then we find out it's a prank, and it's like, oh shoot, what did we do? Like, you know, Mr. Furley's dead. You know,
yeah.
Like they just took it way too far, and I thought to myself, man, if that was my daughter, I'd be like sending her to prison. That was like, she's like the worst human being ever to make her parents think that she had killed somebody. And I'm completely spoiling it for anybody that wants to see this movie. And just so that they could get back together again, she was happy that they were getting along. So I just. And then the other, you know, the fact that the one girl's father is murdered along the way is just, it's like, again, it's like a bad Three's Company episode taken too far. Or like a comedy suspense film where, like, the worst things happen. I put this right up there with another movie we're going to review in the video vault later. So with crazy things happening.
Okay.
But everybody is, the acting is okay. They're all thespians. Sarsgaard works very hard to do the most intense films you can possibly find, with the exception of Green Lantern. And, it's probably his best work. And then, I watched it. I wasn't bored. I'll give it that. So. And it was interesting to see an asthmatic on screen.
So while you guys were doing this, I had to just play the beginning of the Three's Company theme song to remind myself.
Okay.
And I really think we should get Doug's son on like an edit cut of this to how many times somebody opens a door or closes the door. Da-da-da-da-da. Come and knock on my door. Doug, I'm going to kill you for putting this movie on the list. I freaking almost killed you. This was the movie I hated.
This was the one? Okay.
This is the one. Because the one you guessed I hadn't even seen yet.
Okay.
I literally stood there going, this is my daughter? I would have killed her. Mm. Like, who does this crap? And I hate Miranda Enos. It's got to be one of the worst actresses I've ever seen in my life. She is boring. Peter Skarsgård is boring. Joey King, boring. The only person that kind of acts is the dad, and he's terrible too, the other dad. And this movie, and they sit there, I'm like, who goes to the cops? I'm like, what are you doing? What a bad decision that was. Who wrote that in the script? I got an idea. We'll screw him up. We'll send him to the cops. And the cops magically figure this out without doing much detective work? And the guy keeps the phone? Again, like, who makes these bad decisions? My daughter told me she just killed somebody having to protect her. Okay. All that crap is gone. Down the nearest sewer. Maybe I'll mail it to somebody in Tokyo so they'll never find it. Out of here. It drove me nuts to the point, literally, I wanted to shave my head for enjoyment purposes.
Isn't it already shaved?
Sorry. Yeah, I was ready to take the rest of it off and the beard and the ball hair because I was so pissed.
Oh, no.
Watching this. If I found Doug's address, I was about to drive and give up 2 weeks of quarantine just to yell at him on his front lawn. I was so pissed about this film. Garbage is all I can say when I finish this. Absolute terrible garbage. The ending of the film, when the chick just shows up in the car, ha ha, I was with my boyfriend. oh, that'd be a funny joke. I would have popped her right in the face.
Yeah.
If I was Skarsgård, I would have just popped her right in the face. Dropped her right in my garage. Bagged her and put in the dumpster. Problem solved.
Now you said bagged her, right?
Yes, I did. Like, okay. Garbage bag, big one, slope slash dropper. Would have liked the ending better.
It was a weird...
The ending was so bad, it wasn't funny.
When the girl, the friend is in the car, there's this weird setup to think that maybe there's something going on between her and the father.
Yes!
Yeah, and then that just goes nowhere. The jealousy of that.
And I think they continue that when they go have band practice.
What?
Remember they have the band practice in the guy's room at the guy's apartment?
Uh-huh. Oh, right.
And they go on about the band. Why is your wallet with you? The woman gets upset because she continues that premise that they're having an affair.
And then she finds a purse in his car and thinks that he's having an affair. She doesn't know who it belongs to.
He does. He tells her whose it is.
Oh, but she doesn't.
He tells her, but he says it's his daughter's friend's.
And she doesn't believe him.
She's jealous because she thinks he's having an affair with somebody else.
Right, but it was ridiculous.
But who gives a fuck? It was a boring sideline. It was like a 2-second annoying
thing. But
that
still continues the part from the beginning when we think he's having an affair.
It was just to set it up so that he'd be more open to thinking fondly of his ex-wife. I think they were bonding again over this Three's Company scenario.
And then the cops seem to insinuate, ooh, maybe you like little girls kind of thing.
Yeah, they pinged the phone at his apartment.
Yeah.
Yeah, like dumb things like that. I was just like,
Daniel, what did you think of this movie?
I'm in agreement. I honestly thought the premise was a good idea. Like the starting point of the premise was a good idea with just yeah, exactly. Like, just the idea of, like, okay, how far would you go for your kids to defend your kids? But just how it happened was unwatchable, to say the least. Just with... I thought I liked Joey King, but her character is so bratty here. And then I do like Peter Sarsgaard, and I do like Mirai Enos. I love the show The Killing. I don't know if you guys ever watched that. But no, like, I thought the acting was fine. But... Yeah, Joey King was bratty. The characters were just not likable. Mm-hmm. Yeah, like, I would have just been like, okay, I understand she's your kid, but she's just going about her day like a psychopath. And then we know why, because nothing happened. And I honestly started to like it a little bit when they went to the dad's house. Yeah, no, I started to kind of like it when they went over to that other dad's house, Brittany's dad's house, and they put the phone in the backyard. I thought that was kind of tense. And then they hit him with the car, and I was like, okay, kind of getting maybe interesting. And then I just got so pissed when she walked in. I'm like, God, you freaking kidding me, man. You said, Simon, I would have killed her, and I would have killed Joey King.
Well, to me, they were all psychopaths because they literally let the father die in front of them. He's begging for help.
True.
And they're like, no, just let him die. That way it's better for us. Are you complete psychopaths or what?
Well, I'm just thinking, if Doug has kids and I have kids, if my kid did this, would you not slap him upside the head going, what the hell?
Might do a little more than that, but...
I'm trying to be politically somewhat correct.
They should have called this helicopter parenting.
This crap.
Now, just imagine Joey King... But her character is the character from the kissing booth in The Lie.
Ooh.
I don't. Well, then she'd be screwing around with that guy in Boston, wouldn't she? Or the Mario. I'm still confused. Or the guy she should have ended up with. The guy that was dancing with her.
Yeah, the Dance Revolution guy. Yeah.
And well, then Kissing Booth 3 coming in. I can't wait to Doug.
Oh, awesome. One.
And the prison in this movie is a kissing booth, right? They don't go to prison. They just have to be in a loop of a kissing booth forever.
I'm sure that'll be the next Netflix movie coming up that Kevin will find. Love, Kissing Booth, repeat.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
That's a good one. I like that.
I'm trying.
Are we going on trial?
I think so. It's time, because it's fine.
It's fine. The trial is...
No, it's fine. The movie was just fine. It was okay.
Oh, sorry. It wasn't. It's fine. It's just fine.
It was enjoyable. Nah.
Listen, I turned the movie on, and then I watched it, and it was fine.
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 Okay. I'm so distracted by the thumbs up like coming out of your shoulder, Simon, with the Borat.
You'll have to see the video, people. There's Borat behind me on my green screen.
Okay, The Trial of Chicago 7, written and directed by Aaron Sorkin, starring Eddie Redmayne, Sacha Baron Cohen, Jeremy Strong, Joseph Gordon-Levitt, Alex Sharp, John Carroll Lynch, Yahya Abdul-Mateen II, Mark Rylance, Frank Langella, and Michael Keaton. I tried to get that off quickly before you stopped me from saying too many names, Simon.
No, I like those people.
Okay.
It's when you mention people I don't care about is what I would like. Sorry, okay. Kevin, but I don't care. Kevin doesn't care. He's in the movie either. I can start this one off. I liked it a lot. Aaron Sorkin should have written The Lie. Marina Enos would still be talking in the beginning.
Oh, no.
I like the writing. The crisp writing that I only get from Sorkin is always captivates me. I think as a director, he still has a long way to go.
Mm-hmm.
I think he spends a lot more time on stillness on shots, like stagnant. He doesn't really move the camera a lot. At least I find he doesn't, because he relies on his crisp dialogue, which he probably should. His dialogue is completely and utterly fantastic, Everly. I mean, I did do a little bit more research on this because it was a little more interesting. The trial lasts like 6 months of this crap. I would have killed myself if I was in there. And I felt bad, because, I mean, even at the beginning, I felt bad for the Black Panther guy, really. I mean, that was ridiculous what happened to him, that we would have done that as society to him, upset me. I really think this whole trial at the beginning, which is something I feel I should have known about, maybe Kevin, he reads a little bit deeper, think it's something I should have known about.
Are you saying I should have told you about it?
No, I think you would have known about the trial existing.
Yes.
Like,
I
knew nothing about this going into it. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, this is something I know you would maybe watch anyway. If Doug hadn't put it on his list, you would have put it on yours for sure.
Well, it's a new release. We would have watched it. It's a big release.
Right. So let's go back. Who lets this judge get elected? I thought elected officials were elected in this. Maybe I'm wrong about the American system.
No, judges are appointed. Judges are appointed.
So they're appointed? This guy's a clown. I can't believe he's still at his job, but I guess back then you could do whatever you wanted.
Well, judges...
I'm sorry. I was just going to say this was the time in Nixon, so...
Yeah.
Oh, well, that explains a lot.
Mm-hmm.
Like I said, let's go back. Everybody I thought played a decent character. I thought Sacha Baron Cohen was wonderful. I thought Mark Rylance was wonderful, even though it was supposed to be played by Philip Seymour Hoffman. I had no issues. I thought Joseph Gordon-Levitt was just sort of there. It was wonderful to see Keaton. I think Keaton just comes in and breathes more life into this film as it goes. I thought I actually did enjoy the riot scenes. I thought were a little better shot than the courtroom. I thought when he moved out there, he had a little bit more to do. I like the bigger guy that was the... I can't remember his name.
John Carroll Lynch.
John Carroll Lynch and everything. He's like just one of those character actors, again, can breathe things into any role he has. He brings something to the table. The only guy I thought maybe I did like, even what's his face, the British guy, Eddie Redmayne, who I'm sure is doing the wrong accent halfway through this film. he didn't look quite right to me. And the guy that's hanging out with Sacha Baron.
Yeah, Jeremy Strong.
Didn't do much for me, but that was fine. Like I said, the writing is so good on this. I let things go I wouldn't normally go by watching it. So, yeah, excellent watch. It was better than fine.
Okay. I thought that Jeremy Strong, like the way he talked kind of reminded me of Tommy Chong.
And the way he looked too.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. No, yeah, I love this one. Love the cast. I love the courtroom. Gosh dang, I can't see it.
It's the same. It's
okay. Fun. Sorry. Yeah, I know. I love the courtroom drama. I love courtroom dramas. Just love the way they shot the riots too, and just it felt raw during some of those scenes, which I really like. I don't have any. I have a pen I can hold up, but that's about
that
it.
Was, Boba Fett was about to fire his missile.
Oh, okay. And I love to hate the judge. I really like Frank Langella, and just like him as like a villain was compelling. Exactly what they did with the Black Panther and just his plot, but. The one thing I was bothered by was because I can do math fine. I was just trying to figure out like who's the Chicago Seven because there's eight of them. And then I learned, okay, so Black Panther guy is separate from them. I really enjoyed it. I thought Aaron Sorkin's writing is great. I think he's good as a director with this one and Molly's Game. Don't know if he's directed any other ones.
He has one more, and I can't remember the name of it off the top of my head.
Oh, did he do Steve Jobs? No.
Yes, that's it.
Okay.
Hey, just to back up to your point, I can see how you were confused on the seven, but the Panther guy tells us numerous times, he's not my lawyer. I don't know if you missed that or forgot that.
No, just at the very beginning, like 20 minutes in, I was trying, just by myself, trying to count how many there were.
Oh, okay. I got that.
Yeah.
Okay, perfect.
I just got really hung up on it. Like there's eight of them. Kind of thing, but then I caught up. Yeah, no, I better than I really enjoyed this one.
Well, my take on this is that those who don't know history are doomed to repeat it, and there were so many parallels between this outgoing administration that we're just getting rid of now and the Nixon administration and the things that were going on there that I think Sorkin was deliberately drawing parallels. The new administration comes in and they want to make a case out of something which the Justice Department is ready to dismiss as not having any merit. So they bring in a judge who's biased and very pro-Nixon and his point of view. And it turns out to be, as they all determine, a political trial. It's not a criminal justice trial. It's a political trial. And I thought the cast was fantastic. Of course, the dialogue's fantastic. I don't know how creative you can get with courtroom drama, Simon, as far as camera shots goes. You know, generally you've got three or four different angles, and you don't want to move in with sweeping camera angles that would distract.
I realize that, but the problem is this film all takes place pretty much in the courtroom.
Pretty much. In the courtroom, in the park. And in the headquarters of their...
Yeah, so, I mean, I felt bad for him, but I did find it a little staticky at times. But, again, I didn't take that away because the writing was so good, I just didn't care.
And one of the things that's come up in the last few years is, how can someone work for the government and protect a point of view which is abhorrent to most people? And so here we have Joseph Gordon-Levitt, who's the prosecutor, and he doesn't necessarily believe that they're guilty, but he has a job to do. He has been appointed to do the job, so he will follow it to the letter of the law as he's been forced to administer it. So this is how it goes in the law. I thought it was fantastic. And Frank Langella, of course, is insane, but fantastic. And there's no way that should have ever happened with the antics that he was doing. That would have been completely thrown out, and there would have been a mistrial and all sorts of stuff going on. But it was the Nixon era where they were allowing things to go through. And I don't know. Anyway, I highly recommend it. Michael Keaton, of course, is his "You Can't Handle the Truth" moment on the witness stand. I thought he was great.
Yeah, but
yeah,
okay. Like, I'm sorry, Dad. Go ahead.
Oh no, I was gonna say I pretty much echo what everybody else was saying, that like I love the cast in this movie. I watched it with my youngest son, and he was shocked that Sacha Baron Cohen was playing a serious role, that it wasn't really comic. He was shocked that it was Borat on screen. One complaint would probably be the Joseph Gordon-Levitt character. I think Aaron Sorkin sees him as heroic because he's doing his job even though he doesn't agree with it. I don't think that's heroic. I think he should have, if he was a real hero, he would not have taken the job. He had his boss sitting right next to him the whole time, who was a jerk and a scumbag who could have taken over. I don't see that character as heroic as Aaron Sorkin does.
I think you got to look at that scene that Joseph Gordon-Levitt tried to argue that right off the beginning that he didn't think this. No, I think Joseph Gordon-Levitt is trying to move up the ladder. So he kind of has to take this case or he's not going to get to where he wants in his career. I don't think he wants to do it.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think he has a choice. I mean, we all have bosses at times that tell us to do things we don't want to do. And we have a choice in that matter. But if you're in the system like he is and close to the top, you kind of have to do it. There's nobody else to do it. And his boss clearly said, it's your trial. I ain't doing this.
But I would also argue that that isn't really a heroic stance to take for Joseph Gordon-Levitt to be, if he's just trying to climb the ladder of success, I don't know if that's as heroic as Sorkin wants to make him out to be.
I agree with you. I don't think he's trying to be a hero, though. And maybe Sorkin's trying to portray him as that, but I have to agree. I don't think he's a hero. I think it's just a guy doing his job. But I don't think he tries to railroad these guys, though. I think he tries to give them every opportunity to get out of this.
Well, Sorkin does give him some heroic moments, though. He gives him the when Hayden's reading out the names of the war dead, he stands up and he's like, I'm giving them honor, sir, to his boss. So he tries to give him heroic moments. I just don't find the character heroic.
Oh, would we argue that he's not being a douche? Like, if he's sitting down, then you would say he's being a douche. Like, he's not saying he agrees with this. He's just saying, hey, that's polite. That's what I would do, and I would want done for me.
Well, he also had the scene where he was talking with Sacha Baron Cohen and Jeremy Strong. I forget the character names off the top of my head. I know they're real people, and I should know them.
It's Abby Hoffman and Jerry Rubin.
Yes, when he sees them in the park and he has the discussion with them, he's trying to be nice to them, give them some advice. That, again, is another Sorkin trying to make this guy heroic to me.
Well, I think he also tries to make Hoffman heroic at times, and maybe he is. I mean, I did find the stand-up really helped me to understand the film a little bit better. Like, I did enjoy the Abby Hoffman character, and I was actually upset because I was going to look him up, and the post credits saying Abby Hoffman died, killed himself.
Yeah.
And I kind of upset me. I'm like, I think this guy would have been an interesting thinker going ahead.
20 years later, killed himself.
Is it 20 years later? It was like nine.
It was, yeah, it was like, this was the early 70s. This was, he killed himself in the late 80s.
Yeah. Okay. So did he do something that I don't know about, or no? He just...
He was a Eve. Did that book steal this book? And then I assumed like it was his buddy dying that maybe put him into like a depression or something. Because it said that the other hippie, Jeremy Strong's character, got hit by a car.
Yeah, he founded this group called the Yippies.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
That's what he was known for.
Yeah, the Youth International Party.
Okay.
But yeah, he's like a counterculture figure. Of the late 60s and early 70s, and he just didn't fit in the 80s, I guess, right? So
I don't know. I think there might have been more issues to that. I mean, I would like to see a film on that guy. There might be something there that I don't know about. It might be something interesting.
Do you guys want, I just wanted to add on about your conversation about Joseph Gordon-Levitt. Just say,
go ahead.
I don't know if I saw him as a hero. I just think I saw him as him depicting him as a decent person with just whatever... decent person would do when he's like, hey man, you're doing this to this Black Panther guy. Like, what the fuck, dude?
No, I got the impression that he was a government stooge. He was that's not a bad or a good person. He was a person in a position that was tasked with a job. And
he might be still alive. We should email him and ask him, are you a government stooge or a hero?
I don't think he was either one.
Okay.
I think he was just, that was his job. He did it.
Kevin, that's what you would do, wouldn't it?
If I were in the government and I was tasked to do something, I guess I would do it. Unless I so fundamentally disagreed with it, I just couldn't ethically do it.
Fair enough.
And I guess he didn't feel ethically that this was a challenge. So they were in the park. They did commit violence. So.
But if somebody's attacking me, like a large group of people with batons, and Shields, I think you deserve a right to fight your back for yourself.
Well, all right. So what's going on? What was going on in Portland a little while ago? Who was right there? Were the police right to fight back, or were the rioters right to do what they were doing?
What happened in Portland? I think I missed this.
Oh, you've completely not followed the news, I guess, so sorry.
I do sometimes, but not all the time.
So there have been steady riots in Portland for most of the summer, Black Lives Matter and all sorts of stuff.
Now I know what we're talking about. Yeah, I think the protesters are a little more riled up.
Sure, but the police also acted a certain way. So, and the government also sent people in and snatched what they felt were the leaders of that group, that movement.
I feel weird about that. Again, I think we're seeing the same thing as Chicago 7. The government's trying to take
control of the situation. Which is the point of the film.
Correct.
Yeah.
But are they right? I think we're looking at two different movements here. I mean, Black Lives Matter is a very motivated, organized protesters.
These were all very organized youth protesters that were arrested.
Then both of them, I don't think the riots should happen.
Yeah.
The way they show it there, the cops started it. I don't know about this one. I haven't seen, read who started it. But this one I think is probably equal. I think tensions are very high on both sides.
I think
the cops have done something they shouldn't have done. Period.
I think in both scenarios, people were protesting the government.
Yes.
And the government reacted with force.
Correct.
Was the government right in reacting with force?
I think in both cases, probably out of line in both cases.
So the message of the Chicago 7 is that most of them were innocent of starting the riots.
Correct.
There's no evidence, aside from what Thomas Hayden said to the crowds about fighting back against the police, most of them were advising nonviolence.
Correct.
And that was used against them, like they were made to be scapegoats for violence.
Right, but I don't hear that from the Black Lives Matter organization.
Well, I don't think the Black Lives Matter organization instigated violence in Portland either. So none of their leadership have been arrested, but the government has been scapegoating them and blaming them as a political movement. And Antifa, there is no Antifa movement. People are anti-fascist. There's no organizing. Right. Yeah. So anyway,
I guess we'll find out in 5 years. I agree with
when
you.
We can see 20 years from now, we can have the trial of the Portland 2.
Nah, it won't happen.
Or whatever. So anyway, so I'm glad you read the news.
I know what we're talking about now. There's a lot of Black Lives Matter movements going on. I figured which one we were talking about.
That's fair.